Hello, listeners. Welcome to another edition of The Throwback. This is your host, as always, Ryan the Podman.
Hey, daddies, it's me, Jimmy the Radio Man. I'm back live in a living color, daddy. It feels so good to be back. I miss each and every one of you people.
Well, it's definitely good to see you here, Jimmy. Well, what's me and Left of My Sanity both thank you.
You're so funny. Let me tell you something here, daddy. My little cousin Tommy absolutely loved spending time with you on the last show.
I'm sure he did. I still have a concussion from that baseball bat to the head to prove it. Anyways, folks, we have a really great show lined up for you today. The host of the popular Nickelodeon show, Nick Arcade, Mr. Phil Moore, will be our special guest to talk about his time hosting the iconic show.
Yeah, I love Phil Moore, daddy. He's the coolest cat around. I love these shirts he wears, man. He knew how to style and profile. Let me tell you something, man. He had that swag for a game host. Hey, Ryan, man. My little cousin, he can't stop talking about you. Me and my family are so grateful for you to have babysat my little cousin. I actually brought you a present.
That was not necessary, Jimmy. You didn't have to bring me anything.
Oh, but I did, Daddy. You know how much me and my family loved you, so I brought you something.
Oh, nice. A box. Wait, why is this box all banged up and tore up? What happened to it?
Well, I accidentally dropped it on the way to the studio and the car ran over it. But don't worry about it. It's still good, I think.
Let me see what's in here. Oh, a box of Pogs. I haven't seen these in years.
Yeah, Daddy, check it out. These aren't just any Pogs. They're special Pogs.
Let me see. What? A Carl Winslow Pog?
Ain't he funny? Check this one out. There's a top of the line Arsenio Hall Pog.
Wow, I can definitely say I've never seen anything like this before. Wait, is this a Sinbad Pog?
Yeah, Daddy, it's Sinbad. You remember him? He's back in Pog form. And look at this, I even got a Tim Curry Pog, Daddy. You remember him, the limousine and pizza guy at Home Alone 2?
Yes, I do, but how come these Pogs look weird?
Oh, my neighbor's scanner was kind of messed up, so the pictures are kind of faded. Sorry about that, Daddy.
Wait, these aren't even real Pogs?
Of course they are. My neighbor made them himself. All kinds of other stuff. He even makes homemade beer in his basement, buddy.
Yeah, okay, that's enough. I don't think we should be hearing any of this. Thanks for the gift, okay? Okay, be sure to check us out, guys, on Spotify and iHeartRadio for more exclusive interviews. Now, here's our exclusive interview with Nick Arcade star, Mr. Phil Moore.
You are listening to The Throwback Podcast, your stop for everything 90s. This is a Throwback exclusive.
Joining me at this time is the host of the popular 90s Nickelodeon TV show, Nick Arcade. I am pleased to welcome Mr. Phil Moore. Phil, how are you doing, my man?
Hey, I'm doing great. Mr. Fillmore, oh my gosh, you sound like my lawyer.
Well, I got to give you respect, man. You're a legend.
Dude, I really appreciate it, and I got to give respect back to, you know, fans like you that have, like, you know, remember the show and love it and are still, you know, fans of it.
Yeah, it was such a popular show for its time. Like, were you into video games before you started on Nick Arcade?
Actually, not really. I mean, like, it wasn't that I didn't like them. I fell in love with video games when I was in college. You had to go to places like arcades. Of course, they had the home systems back there, but yeah, it wasn't like it is now. It became an experience to go to you know, an arcade. I mean, back in the day before, well, Chuck E. Cheese's was around, but there was also a place called Showbiz Pizza. Every now and then, like, I would drag my nieces and nephews to Discovery Zones because they had video games, and then they had lots of arcades all over the place, you know? So I played games like that. I love the big console games. Even when I played them at home, like, if you got something for your, you know, your PlayStation or your like, before PlayStation, your Super Nintendo,
yeah,
your Nintendo 64, your Sega Genesis, it was okay, but it wasn't like playing the big, you know, console stand-up things at an actual video arcade.
Oh, yeah.
I played okay. I played every now and then. I tried not to play too much because I was in college and I wanted to pass. So I was an okay fan. I was what you may call a moderate fan of video games.
Oh, you were like casual. With
I was casual. That's right. I was a casual player.
Yeah.
You know, on the weekend, we would see something, you know, and that's about it, though. I was a casual player before getting the job on Nick Arcade.
Yeah. What were you doing before you started on Nick Arcade? Like, what was your career like beforehand?
Well, right before Nick Arcade, I had gone through this paradigm shift of careers. I went to school. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. I went to college down in Daytona Beach, and then got a job when I finished school over in Orlando, working for AT&T at their data center. So I was kind of doing the regular Joe thing, you know. I was, trying to make the parents proud, you know.
Yeah.
Then one day AT&T went on strike, and I found myself on the picket line. And out of the picket line, my energy, my sense of humor, we were like just having fun. And somebody said, "Man, we have way too much fun to be unemployed." And at that exact, it's like really like a weird timing of things. At that time, this brand new comedy club called Bonkers opened up in Orlando, and somebody said, "You got this brand new comedy club is opening up in Bonkers. You should go in there, man, because they give away $100 for open mic night." And so it was kind of like, you know, it was almost like I was dared into doing stand-up, because it was like, you can use the money if you win, because we're unemployed, because we're on strike right now. We got plenty of time. So I started doing that, and even when the job came back, I kept on doing stand-up comedy. And it became sort of my weekend kind of thing. I would work during the day, my regular job, and then on, you know, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, I would be, you know, performing at comedy clubs. And eventually, I just ended up quitting my day job because I started getting more and more bookings doing stand-up. And that's what I was doing when I auditioned for Nick Arcade. I was doing stand-up comedy. And then the other thing that I was doing kind of on the side, but sort of the same, mm-hmm. was audience warm-ups for TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
While I was doing stand-up comedy, at the time I was married, and my wife and I were expecting our first child. So I didn't want to be on the road like stand-up comics are. You know, before she was pregnant, it was like she could go with me, and I could either be away together, or I could pop away mm-hmm. for a week and come back. But I was about to become a dad, so I wanted to be, you know, more hands-on. And Disney and Universal had just built their new studios. It was the Disney MGM Studios, mm-hmm. and Universal was still in the process of, like, building theirs. But it wasn't just going to be a theme park attraction. They were going to be actual working sound stages. And shows started shooting down there, like the Mickey Mouse Club, MTV's Remote Control shot there. Mm-hmm. There was a show called Win, Lose, or Draw that used to be on. If you don't know these things, Google them, yeah. folks. They were hot shows, and they were really popular. And so I landed the gig of being the audience warm up at these shows. Most of them that I named shot at the Disney MGM Studios. And so I could do my stand up comedy on the weekend, and then I could be home and still work. If I didn't want to go out of town on the weekend, I still had the money I made from doing the audience warm-ups right there, you know, at home, sort of. So that's what I was doing. And stand-up comedy and you know, doing my comedy bit for audience warm-ups. And then I got the gig, I got the audition.
Wow. So how did you first learn about the Nick Arcade gig? Like, how did you end up being the host?
Well, I sort of planned it to see myself. I was up in New York doing some stand-up comedy. I was opening up for a bunch of dudes. I had a manager who managed to put together this nice little run where I was doing I was the opening act for, like, I think it was 1 week with Sinbad, another week it was Dana Carvey, mm-hmm. and another week I think it was Drew Carey, because I remember meeting him and thought he was just super funny. Mm-hmm. And all of these people, with the exception of, well, Sinbad was a huge, huge name then. Dana Carvey, it was like right after Saturday Night Live. And yeah. And I think the only one that was sort of up and coming was Drew Carey. I was working up there, and then I ended up just going to another club one night just to hang out, because you get to know people. I was living in New York for like a month doing this particular contract. Mm-hmm. And Ken Ober, the late, great Ken Ober, stand-up comedian and host of the old game show called Remote Control on MTV, was there that night. And I was a fan of that show. It was so crazy. It was a game show, but it was like totally off the wall. And I just started chatting it up, just really just talking. Like, hey, how are you? I'm a big fan, da-da-da-da-da. I watched him do a set. You know, we talked later on afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of said, hey, listen, I'm a stand-up comic. You know, I love game shows. Is there anybody over at MTV, like a name you could give me so that maybe I could send them my resume? And he gave me a couple of names, and that literally was it. So I went back later on that week and, you know, wrote a nice little email and sent it in, and then also walked to the actual, you know, went to the actual building and handed in like a hard copy of my resume and my headshot. And that's it. I never met anybody. I never talked to anybody. I simply emailed and delivered my headshot and resume. And then about a month later, I'm back in Orlando, and the manager that booked that little run that I was doing in New York gave me a call and said, hey, so, what you doing in New York, man? I'm like, what are you talking about? That was like a couple months ago. He goes, dude, I got Viacom calling me. They want you to, like, audition for something. I'm like, for what? You know? And they wanted me to audition to do the warm-up for Remote Control. And that's how these people, Viacom, MTV, CBS, Nickelodeon, they're all connected. Viacom is the parent company that owns them all. So I got to meet those people because I was doing the warm-up for Remote Control. And then shortly thereafter, almost the same thing happened. Hey, Phil, Viacom called again. They got an audition for a new game show. I'm like, really? So it literally was like, you know, people sometimes, how did you get the job? What happened to make it happen? I kind of go, I answered the phone. I mean, that's like the simple way of doing it. But, like, because I had already done some stuff for Remote Control, the people that were, like, the big wigs and stuff were familiar with me. They'd seen me do my stand-up. They'd seen my energy. And then all of a sudden, Nickelodeon, I guess somebody. Now, here's the person I want to meet. I don't know who this somebody was. I would love to shake his or her hand. I would love to give whoever it was a big old bear hug, because somebody from, like, the MTV group up in Viacom passed my name and headshot and resume on to somebody at Viacom in the Nickelodeon group. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it landed there. All I know is that they made the call to my manager, and the next thing you know, I'm auditioning. And the audition is just that regular same old boring thing. Auditions are boring, people, by the way.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to hear, like, the beginning story. Oh, tell me about the audition for the show. It's really the most boring part of my career. You go into a room and you look around, and there's about 50 of you, you know, because they all want to type, and the types are all kind of the same.
Yeah.
You might be a little bit, somebody might be older, somebody might be younger. There might be different races. Somebody might be maybe male, maybe female. But at the core of it, after you look at everybody and you listen to them, you realize, oh, we're all the same dude. They wanted a certain energy. They wanted a certain disposition, you know. And you sit around and you wait, and then you go into a room, and there's about four or five people sitting behind a table. Somebody's running a camcorder. And, you know, you look at the lines and you do your shtick. I mean, auditions are really kind of boring. But that's what led up to the audition.
Wow. So auditioning isn't as glamorous as you seem, like you were saying. Like, a lot of people think it's all fun and games, but it's actually pretty boring.
Oh, it's pretty boring. I mean, look, whether you like this movie or not, the best example of what the audition is really like is when Emma Stone goes to audition in the movie La La Land.
Right.
That is almost the exact way it is. You're just one of many people that are all kind of looking alike. They're all kind of, because they're looking for a type. And then when you go there, the people sitting behind the table, they're not meaning to be rude or disrespectful. But, later, you know, if you've got like a 12 o'clock, no, it's not even 12 o'clock. If you've got like a 2 o'clock audition, you're probably the 200th person they've seen that day. You know what I mean?
It's just another number.
Right, yeah, you become a number, right? And if they're phone, and at that point in time, they're kind of looking for anything to distract them, any sort of a break, you know. So sometimes they're not really paying attention. Sometimes they might be on their phone while you're busy doing your thing, and you're like, pay attention to me so you can see me be brilliant, you know. They might be looking glassy-eyed or looking like they're sleepy. Because it's been a long day for them, and the majority of the people that they saw probably suck. So But yeah, that little scene in La La Land with Emma Stone going in for the audition and stuff, that right there, oh my gosh, that is like so for real, you know, of how it is. So it's really kind of boring, you know. I can't even remember how many people were in the room, maybe three or four. And they give you a sheet of paper with the, you know, what you're supposed to be saying on it. And you just kind of do it and hope that whatever it is you do kind of makes them give you a call back, which is, you know, when they ask you, they narrow down the playing field. Let's say they look at 200 people and then they cut out about half of them. And then maybe they look at another 100 or maybe 75. And they cut them down to like maybe, you know, 30. So it's like a whittling down process. That's what the callback is.
Wow.
Now, I got to tell you, what's unique about Nick Arcade is, and getting the job was, it was probably the longest audition process I have ever had in my entire life.
Wow.
Because normally you do an audition, even if it's for film, you do it, you get a callback, maybe another callback, and then they bring you in to either run the lines with whoever else is going to be there, or they, sometimes in films it's called a screen test where they bring you onto a sound stage or into a studio. Nick Arcade, I had the original audition and 7 callbacks.
7, wow.
7. Y'all don't understand. Every time the phone rings, it's like you either want to throw it across the room, you're afraid to answer it, because by that time, you know, like, you know, 2 weeks have gone by. You've invested everything in it. Your mind starts to calculate how your life would to change if you got the job. You think more about getting the job. It's hard to put out of your mind, especially when you keep going back over and over and over again. And man, oh, by the time I got that last phone call, I was like, I almost felt like saying, "Look, hire me or leave me alone, you stalker," because it was like, oh, it's got to be crazy, man. It's got to be crazy. Take me or leave me alone. Let me move on with my life.
Yeah, you get tired of it. Oh, man. So what was it like filming an episode of Nick Arcade? Like, how long did it usually take to, like, film one episode?
By the time we got up to speed, and I got to clarify that, because when you're first starting a show, everybody involved is learning the show.
Yeah.
And what we do is what's called a slow build-up. So, like, the first episode we shot one episode. The second day we shot two, and we were slowly adding an episode, building up to our regular run of 3 to 4 a day.
Wow.
3 to 4 a day. So a typical day was exhausting. I would lose my voice by the time I got to the end of the 4th show because of just talking,
yeah.
Which is interesting, too, because, like, you know, people ask me a lot about favorite episodes and this and the other. I have a tendency to remember more like favorite moments because think about it. The show had 4 contestants each, and we shot 4 a day.
Wow.
Okay. So when people ask like your favorite episode, they all kind of blend together. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, by the time I get done with a day, you know, I've seen so many people. And we played so many different games that it's kind of hard for me to remember that how we got edited together to be just one particular episode.
Yeah.
But a typical day was, the night before I would get the script, and it wasn't really scripted, but you know, like there was a script that had like what the games would be, the rules of the game, what the puzzles would be. You know, in the points, puzzles, pop quizzes, and prizes, you know. So I had to go over what the puzzles were. I had to get familiar with what they were going to be. I had to look over the lines and stuff of, like, the games that were going to be featured in the video zone. And then the next morning, I'd drive about, like, 8 o'clock in the morning. We'd have a big meeting with everybody involved. Then after the big meeting, I'd go to wardrobe and put on the clothes I was going to wear. And then go to hair and makeup and get... You know, wasn't much to do with my hair. You know, I had my little, you know, high top fade at the time, and then we'd do mic checks. I put on my microphone. Mm-hmm. I would try to go say hello to the contestants, but just for the sake of standards and practice, you can't really hang out and talk and just kind of chill with the contestants, because as the person who has the questions and the answers, it's considered not like legally ethical for the person with the questions and answers to be seen kind of fraternizing with people, you know?
It's frowned upon, basically.
Right, it's frowned upon. So basically, here's another little bit. Like, when I do podcasts, I do it. Every now and then, I like to slide into behind-the-scenes educational stuff. So the next time that you see, like, somebody who maybe hosts a game show and you're there and they seem very standoffish, don't go tweeting and putting on Instagram that they're a jerk. They're really not allowed to, you know, hang out and mingle. They can come and say hello. They can talk to the audience and stuff. But for legal purposes, it's frowned upon about them, you know, kind of hanging out with the contestants, because you never want, like, somebody's sister to go, well, he was talking more to Sue over there, and Sue ended up winning. Did he, you know, do something? Did he, just, you know what I mean? Did he show any favor? You never want it to feel like there's any favoritism. And so, and a lot of times, since a lot of things is left up to people's interpretation, in other words, how a person views a situation, the best way to avoid that problem altogether is to not be engaged at all. You know, I can't sit up there and say, I just said hello. I wasn't winking, letting her know I was going to fly to the answer. I just said hello. Well, somebody else can look at that and go, oh, did you see the way he winked at her and waved? Oh, my gosh. You know, so so you just avoid it. And so this, I just want people to know that, too. A lot of times people get upset, but it's not that the person is being standoffish or being rude. It's a legal issue.
Yeah. Not in the best interest to do that. You're getting all kinds of trouble. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But a typical day, that's what it was. And then I put on, you know, I go to wardrobe, get my ugly shirt, and then we go out and we do an episode. And then when that episode was done, when the episode is over, then I would go and take pictures and hang out with the contestants because it's, you know, of the episode we just shot, because it's over then.
Yeah.
It's cool to do that. Then I'd go back and sitting waiting for me in my dressing room was the script for the next day. The next episode. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And I kind of glanced over it because I'd already gotten all four of them the night before. But you know, you sit there, you refresh. You know. Sometimes I drink some tea and honey to help keep my voice, my throat, you know, straight. You know, so I wouldn't blow out my voice. And just kind of go over stuff. And then, boom, they load out that audience and loaded a whole new audience, and we do it again.
Yeah.
You know, so by the time I got done, I'd seen 32 different contestants. There were always backup and alternates. There's all the kids in the audience. There's like 5 video challenges per show.
Yeah.
We would shoot, you know, like I said, 4 episodes a day. So that's why when people go, you know, so by the time I got done, you know, if you do the math on it, you know, that's 20 different games, you know, per day. That's just in a video challenge. And, you know, for contestants, it came out to being, 16 different contestants by the end of a day. And they all kind of blend. So it's really weird when I get interviewed and stuff, people ask about favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. I can tell you about favorite moments. I remember moments. I remember things that happened. But as for a straight episode, outside of the 2 celebrity episodes that we did, the one with Salute Your Shorts and the one with Clarissa Explains It All, they all just blend together.
They did. They really did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So, like, speaking of contestants, how were the contestants for the show chosen? I always wondered that as a kid. Like, how did these kids get so lucky to be on the show?
Well, you know what? It's funny you ask that right now, because I wondered the same thing. because look, my job, I had a different job. There are people assigned to every game show on television.
Right.
And their job is to find the contestants, choose the contestants. Do you really think Steve Harvey is out there picking contestants?
No.
A Family Feud? No. He has no flipping idea of how the contestant process works. He shows up. He's got too many other things to do as the front man.
Right.
So he doesn't get involved in duties that don't require, you know, his talent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you know, it's not on the to-do list, you know. And so that's how it is with me. But I recently shot a new show that I'm about to pitch.
Right.
So this is something coming up in my own show to host again.
Mm-hmm.
And on this particular show, my guest for this one that I just shot was Joey Fatone from NSYNC. And Joey Fatone was a contestant on Nick Arcade before he became NSYNC.
Well, I didn't know that.
And so, yes, Joey Fatone was actually a contestant on the episode is Lil Bad Chef Joseph. We talked about that. Said, back in the day, you were Joseph Fatone. But so fast forward, 2 months ago, I shot this show. I'm putting together a new show to pitch to kind of get back, you know, on camera and on TV or on the web for streaming, doing something like Hulu or Netflix. Mm-hmm. So I've got these celebrity guests coming in, and I booked Joey Fatone on there. And I actually asked him, I said, okay, every time I do an interview, people ask me, how did they choose the contestant? And I always have to disappoint them by going, I don't know. It wasn't my job. Somebody else did it. But I finally asked him, and here's what he said. I finally have it. You're my first interview since finding out.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. So they said that they would go around to a lot of the local high schools, and they would talk to the administrative staff about some of the students that were there and, like, who had this particular type of personality, who had, like, a lot of energy, who was a good kid, you know, because you don't want any Sid from Toy Story coming on your show, jacking up everything.
Yeah.
So they would go to this, and then they would, like, you know, send out an invitation to these various kids to, you know, and their parents, like, hey, if you're interested in being a contestant on this game show, we're having kind of a open contestant casting, you know, on whatever day. And then these kids would show up with their parents, and they would put them through a series of questions and answers. They would play video games with them. They would test their knowledge with trivia. Mm-hmm. They would just sit around and talk to them, like, to find out how their personalities were. So Joey said it was, like, a really intense process because they wanted to make sure that the people were, like, you know, bubbly and have energy and, you know, could speak well on camera and weren't shy.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So that's the process, which makes me wonder how come everybody always seems so boring on the show if they went through this process. But I have to come back and go, you know, being on TV can be overwhelming if you've never done it before. Especially if you're a kid, you know, and it also depends on the show. Like the same kids that were on Nick Arcade, you're kind of standing there by yourself, and in a weird kind of way, it's sort of quiet, and all eyes are on you until, you know, to answer the question or to play the game, as opposed to a show like, say, Guts, in which it's physical and Double Dare, where you're running around and you've got teammates, so you're always kind of sharing the active experience. Even though there were teams on Nick Arcade, you're still kind of just standing there. And it really just depends on you as a single individual. Even though you might be standing there with your red team partner or your yellow team partner, you actually buzz in sort of like individuals. And so the only other show I ever noticed where the kids kind of seem a little bit nervous is Figure It Out, for that very same reason.
Yeah.
You know, the actual contestant is standing over there next to Summer, and just all eyes are on them. You know, there's no partner. There's no physical thing to do. They have to kind of just stand there and just answer questions. That, I think, is why a lot of times the nervousness kicks in, because you don't have that release of energy, like I said, on a Gut, on a Legends of the Hidden Temple, or on Double Dare.
Mm-hmm.
Shows like Nick Arcade and shows like Figure It Out, the contestant is relegated to kind of standing there and just answering, which I think probably is why the nerves would kick back in after giving such a bubbly, you know, audition to be a contestant.
Yeah, I would think so, too. You know, my favorite part of the show was the final round, you know, with the video zone where they actually entered to, like, live video game. The whole concept was, so ahead of its time back then. I always wondered, the actual room where they entered, like, what was actually in there? Was it just, like, a big, giant green screen? Because when they entered the room, you just saw giant smoke. When he would go in.
Right. Okay, so you're exactly right on all points, man. It was extremely ahead of its time. As a matter of fact, it was so ahead of its time that the only way to do Nick Arcade, that technology had to be invented. It did not exist. They sold the show on an invention that no one else had ever seen before.
Oh, really?
And it was a big, giant room. It wasn't really a room. It was the back half of the soundstage. They had built up and painted the entire back half of the stage behind the walls, all green. And everybody nowadays is totally familiar with, you know, doing green screen, doing chroma key. It's like how when you look at the person do the weather, they're standing in front of a green screen and they're looking at a monitor. And then it's projected onto the green screen. It's going to be a high over here today, and temperature is going to be 39 degrees. You know, but looking at a green, they're looking at a TV monitor to see where to point their hand. And but when you actually look at them on set, it's just them standing in front of a blank green wall.
Wow.
You know, we at home see the weathers and the high lows and the temperatures, and they only see it when they look at themselves on a TV monitor that's kind of off to the side. Mm. Everybody's familiar with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here is the genius of, and I got to give these guys props, Karim Metes and James Bethea, the two dudes that invented and created Nick Arcade, pitched Nick Arcade, got the network to do it, but they also created the technology. They were like computer whiz guys, you know. I call them, you know, Sheldon and Leonard, you know, nowadays. I go, you know, you guys were like Sheldon and Leonard.
Yeah, right? I know, yeah.
The Big Bang,
the Bang,
you know?
Theory, yeah,
two buddies,
I love that show.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the two guys, they've known each other since college. They grew up together, and boom, here they are creating the show.
Mm-hmm.
But here was the big trick. This is what was state of the art, because we all now put on our VR goggles and we do virtual reality. It was non-existent back then.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what they did. They created a program that kind of like deceived the computer. Okay, so you know how if you're on a computer, you take the mouse or you take your finger,
yeah,
and you slide it around and you see the cursor,
yeah,
move around, right? And then when you get it to a certain point, like the subscribe button, when you tap it or click it, something activates wherever you land at the cursor,
mm-hmm,
right? But that's being done by your hand outside of the computer.
Yeah.
Now imagine a computer program that when you're standing on a green screen, it tricks the computer into thinking your entire body is the cursor.
Hmm.
That's what made Nick Arcade work. Just like you move the cursor, the point to something, and then click it. Well, imagine if the computer thinks your hand is the cursor. So when you put your hand in a certain spot and you hit that orb, it's like clicking it, and bam, something happens. That is what made Nick Arcade work.
Yeah, wow.
So when the kids would go back into the video dome, they would go into an area, a set that was built to look exactly like what you saw on TV. It wasn't painted. It was all green.
Mm-hmm.
But like if there were stairs, when you saw the kids climb up the stairs, like in the mummy scene,
yeah,
there were actual green stairs. When you saw them hang onto a ledge or hang onto a bar, or like with the one where they're in the jungle,
mm-hmm,
where they have to swing across the river, there was actually a bar that they had to grab onto that they had to swing across. Everything was built to the exact scale and specifications of the green screen overlay,
okay,
but it wasn't painted. It was just green. It was not a green tree there. It was a pine tree there. It was a green piece of cardboard cut out in the shape of a pine tree. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like this scary staircase with like rats and things running across it. It was plain old green stairs, and everything else was added later. But when you're in that moment and when you're in that particular spot, you become the computer cursor. And anything that you touch, you can actually cause some sort of response, because the computer thinks that you are the cursor. A
wow,
free-moving, independent, sentient cursor. You know?
That's kind of crazy.
And the way the kids saw what to do was kind of like the weather person.
Mm-hmm.
Around them, surrounding them, like in front of them, any direction they look, there was a television monitor.
Mm-hmm.
So they would see themselves. So they could see if they were, you know, because if they just look at the real set, they're just looking at a green wall or a green set of stairs. But when they look over at the TV, they would see, oh, there's an orb coming to me as soon as I get to the top of these stairs. They would see what the computer's generating and then know when to put their hand up, because they could see themselves.
Right.
Just like how the weather person knows how to go over here to the north, and he or she knows where to put their hand,
yeah,
where they go, a cold front's moving in. That is that kind of same thing.
Wow. Yes, yes. So cool.
Way ahead of the time, man.
You never saw anything like that before that. And even a little after the show, you never saw anything like that.
I know. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was a cool concept.
And,
yeah.
It was a really cool concept, and they managed to pull it off, man. They managed to pull. I kept thinking, I got to tell you, when they explained the show to me, not the detail of how it works, because, of course, you know, when I first got the job, and then they started explaining to me, you know, what was going to happen on the show, they didn't break down and explain how it works like I just did to you. They just kind of said, here's the premise of the show. They go, da-da-da-da, and at the end, two kids will go inside of a video game. I just kind of looked at them like, you guys really, really think you can pull this off? You know? I said, you basically are going to take, you know, two 14-year-olds and make them Mario and Luigi? They went, yeah, pretty much. I'm like, yeah, right. You know, but they did it.
They pulled it off, man. Yeah, man. Wow. Yeah. Now, from the show, actual Nicker Case Show, do you have a particular actual video game from the show or a game that was your favorite that was either from one of the challenges or the video zone that you... stands out to you more that you liked?
Yes, I do. From the video zone, it's I don't know if it's a fan favorite, but I like the ones where they had to throw the snowballs had to, you know. There was one where it was like you were on an ice, you were on one side of a frozen river, and there were things skating across the ice, and you were given these styrofoam snowballs. And again, the kid would literally be standing, looking down at a floor that was just painted green. Mm-hmm. The snowballs were actually those styrofoam balls that you could get from the store, you know? So the white balls that they threw were real. But they would just throw them across the green floor, and they would take a look at where to aim by watching these monitors in front of them. It literally is so funny because it was like throwing snowballs, but it was literally more like virtual bowling. You know,
yeah.
Because you were taking a look, you were looking at a TV screen to see where your targets were, and then you would, you know, wait and see the target, and you would, in a weird kind of way, it reminded me of, like, what the Wii eventually became, you know? That was my favorite, though, because it seemed so simple, but it was so doggone hard. And then later on, when we did the live tour. We did the Nick Arcade live tour in which they put Nick, I'm not Nick Arcade, I'm sorry. It was called the Nickelodeon live tour in which they took Nick Arcade and Gus and Michael Malley and I co-hosted the show, and we go around across the country doing this live show at arenas.
Mm-hmm.
When we got to the Nick Arcade part, one of the games that we did was the snowball one, and we did it live. So, like, you see these kids on stage rolling these snowballs, but when you looked at the big Jumbotron, they were standing on the edge of an icy river trying to hit these penguins as they skated across this frozen lake.
Mm-hmm.
It was really just... And so that was one of my personal favorites. It seemed simple, it was like bowling, and yet it was really challenging, more challenging than it may have looked. From TV. So that was one of my favorite video zone shows, the Penguin one. I don't even remember what it's called, but that's what I like. That was one of my favorites.
I like the other one that stands out to me was the one, I forget what the contestants were on. I think it was like a barrel or a carpet or something, and they're on this, like, in the
yes.
desert, and they had to avoid this big giant cactus.
Yes, the cactus would nail them every time.
I know, like, how can you avoid something that big?
That big. That cactus would get
that
you
always
every
gets them, no matter
time.
What they did.
Yeah. But I think the reason why I like that one, going back to Snowball, was is because it was the only one that was actually totally unique in how it looked. Like, listen, you all know, you can all figure out that going into the one you just talked about with the desert was
yeah.
also the same one where the magic carpet. Remember, there was one where
yeah,
you were flying
genie,
on a carpet.
Yeah.
It was a genie. It was the exact same, like, set in the back, you know? All of the game wizards were the same set because you can see how they're all staged and how they're placed. Anyone that had a staircase, it was all the same set. But that one that with the snowball, that was an entirely different set in the back. And it was kind of unique when we played that one because, it, for me, it was like, hey, I got to do something different,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Wow. So, a fact that actually kind of surprises me is that none of the games on the show or the actual concept of Nick Arcade was actually turned into an actual video game. Like, some other Nickelodeon shows, like, you know, like Double Dare and Gus, they actually got video games, but the show that's actually about video games doesn't get a video game. I actually thought that was kind
of... Dude, oh my gosh! You know what? I want to, dude, if you were all together, I would hug you so bad. I say that all the time. I posted on my Instagram a picture with Mark. Mark and I were doing a convention someplace, and we were both there together.
Yeah.
And people were bringing up video games for him to sign, the Double Dare video game. I took a picture. I put it on my Instagram, and I put in there, how come the video game show doesn't have a video game? And like, it was like, dude, that used to bug the heck out of me, man. Guts had a video game. The freaking Rugrats had a video game.
Ren and Stimpy did, too.
Ren and Stimpy, but the show about video games never had a video game.
That's so weird to me.
That really sold so many copies. Dude, I love, man, you're preaching to the choir. I talk about that all the time. It bugs the heck out of me. How is that possible? How could a show that deals with mess and digging up a nose to get a flag? That has a video.
Yeah, you know, it's one of life's questions here, man.
Right. But a TV show that is totally about video games, 100% devoted to video games, never, ever, 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 never, ever, ever had a video game produced about it. Drives me nuts, man. You do not know.
That's like a no-brainer.
Dude, and the funny thing is, like I said, props to you. I always bring it up. Nobody else ever brings it up. Whenever I make a comment when I'm, you know, doing interviews or making an appearance somewhere, people kind of go, oh, yeah, that's right. Wow, that's weird. Nobody ever thinks about that. You're the first person that ever brought it up before me, man. I always thought it was crazy.
It's so obvious.
I told Nickelodeon, so if you guys want to make some money, but, you know, they just brought back Double Dare. And I'm like, if you guys want to really make some money and you don't feel like bringing back the show, make a deal with, like, you know, Ubisoft or somebody and come out with a game based on Nick Arcade for the Xbox One and the PS4.
Oh.
You guys will make a grip.
Yeah.
You can use my image. You can pay me. I'll do the voiceover for it, you know. That game, like I said, if you didn't want to bring back the show, if Nickelodeon didn't want to bring, just make a deal with a game manufacturer and make a game.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That thing was so like crazy.
Like hotcakes, man.
Yeah.
That's a missed opportunity.
Especially now that you can like buy it with whatever game system you have with like a virtual headset or something.
Yeah.
Oh man. It would kill.
I don't know.
It would kill.
You know,
I don't know. You know what? If we were the top dogs, we would be making the big bucks.
You would, yeah, that's true, man. How come Nickelodeon never like picked up Nick Arcade for a third season? It had such a strong following. How come after like two seasons, that was it? Like even in reruns, it was showed for like years and years.
Okay, listen up here. Okay, you're treading into dangerous waters here.
Yeah.
We can't talk about politics and industry ethics. We cannot go there. Because in the words of Danny Tabarelli, I'll figure it out. I don't know. I mean, really, I don't know, man. Look, I do have my ideas. I do have my educated my educated deductions based on the empirical data that laid before me.
Right.
And I can just say it's messed up because the show was a hit. As a matter of fact, here's the biggest thing that drives me nuts. Okay, I got to go back in time and just tell your listeners a little bit of about something that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Before everything got awarded an Emmy Award on TV, they used to separate network television award from cable television awards. So cable TV shows, whether it was HBO or Showtime or whatever, if you were on cable TV, Comedy Central, you would get an award called an ACE Award, A-C-E, and it stood for Cable Excellence. Yeah, ACE Awards. It was stood for ACE.
Oh, yeah, I remember those awards. Those used to be on, I think, MIT back in the day.
Right. So ACE Awards, now listen, ACE Awards were a big thing. They were the cable version of the Grammy, of the Emmy. You know, like Grammys, you get a Grammy when you do music. You get an Oscar when you do movies. You get a Tony Award when you do musicals on Broadway. you get an Emmy award when you do network television. And when you did cable television, you got an ACE. So it was like right up there. It was like the top dog. Nick Arcade was nominated for a Cable ACE Award. It didn't win the award, but it also that later that year won an award for best technology in a, you know, non-scripted whatever show, whatever. It won a major award and got nominated for Cable's highest honor. Mm-hmm. And the year that both of those things happened is the year that they decided to cancel the show.
Wow.
It's like imagine if you were an actor and it was only your second year of ever acting. You did one movie, and then your very second movie, you got nominated for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are standing up there next to George Clooney and Denzel Washington Kevin Hart, and somebody else gets it, but you're like, dang, it's only my second year, and I was nominated to stand up with these dudes. And then all of a sudden, you're told you're fired.
Wow.
That doesn't make any sense.
That's mind-boggling.
You're talking that room.
Yeah.
It is. And I cannot give you an answer. The show was at its peak. The ratings were through the roof. And the technology was getting better and better. We were already lined up to introduce brand new prototype games that were never released. The thing that was really cool was, like, video game manufacturers would send us prototypes of games that weren't even out yet,
mm-hmm.
asking us to put them on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we introduced the world of Sonic the Hedgehog 2. You couldn't buy it in the stores, but they came to us and said, hi, we'd like for you to put this on there. We'd like to judge the response from the audience to decide whether or not to release it.
Mm-hmm.
They had also, you know, there was also kind of, they were also kind of talking about doing that with Star Fox 2. Star Fox 2 would have been a game on Nick Arcade had Nick Arcade come back. What's another thing we talked about doing? We talked about doing what I call an episode with the game show host. In other words, instead of four kids as contestants, we would get Summer Sanders, Michael Malley, Kirk Fogg, and Mark Summers as the contestants playing for charity.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine an episode of Nick Arcade? I'm hosting, and then you have what I call Team Summers with Mark Summers and Summer Sanders,
mm-hmm.
right? and Team Obstacle with Michael Malley and Kirk Fogg.
Oh,
and I'm the host, and they're playing Nick Arcade, and whatever money they win goes to some charity. That would have been epic.
That would have been really cool to watch.
Never did it. Never got a season three.
Wow. Another missed opportunity. Wow. That would have been awesome.
At the peak, like, you don't cancel a show at its peak. You cancel a show when the ratings start to drop. Like I said, the show was just nominated for its very first Cable ACE Award, and not many Nickelodeon shows were getting those sort of like nominations.
Mm-hmm.
And here we were just in our second, we were just in our sophomore year, and we had been nominated. So, man, I don't know. I don't know. You asked a question that, you got to see the dark side of Fillmore.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now we need to know what happened, man. That show was awesome.
I just don't know. It makes no sense. And again, getting back to my role, I was, I don't mean to say this disparagingly, but I was just the host.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was the first TV job that I'd ever done. You have executive producers, you have producers, you have the show creators. You've got all of these people who had way more experience in the television industry than I had. They knew the ins and outs of its working. So I wasn't in a position to really lend a voice to affect any sort of change.
Right.
I was no different than the craft services person. In some ways, with respect to the power that I had in making decisions for the show. You know, I was just that person. I was just another employee when it comes to my input into the production process.
Well, you're just the host, but you're also like the face of the show, basically, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the face of the show, but like I said, I'm talking about roles now.
Yeah.
Yes, my job as the face of the show is to keep it entertaining, make sure everybody has fun, do the best darn job I possibly can to make sure that you, the viewers, are, like, digging every minute of it. But when they go into the conference room and check the door and decide, what should we do next season on the network? I got no say.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? So it's really, you know, it was frustrating. It was really frustrating.
Yeah. And so were you able to keep any cool memorabilia from the show after it ended? Like, were you able to keep anything?
A ton of stuff. A ton of stuff. Which, I have none left now. I was giving out Christmas presents, Hanukkah presents, quinceañera presents, Bar Mitzvah gifts, birthday gifts for years. All from stuff that I just had from Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, because every kid that I knew, whether they were a niece or a nephew or a friend's kid or whoever, they all loved Nickelodeon. So, you know, Uncle Phil, quote unquote, Uncle Phil, you know, all I had to do was go, hey, listen, I got a Chucky doll. Hey, yay! And I don't mean Chucky from Child's Play. I'm talking Chucky Rugrats.
Yeah.
I had to clarify that.
Yeah, you might want to make sure about that. It's going to scare some people.
Why is Uncle Phil scaring me? So, it's like, hey, listen, here's a shirt with the Nickelodeon Studios logo on it. Mm-hmm. How about that? And they love that stuff. And so I had a bunch of it, but over the course of time, you know, for 20 years, I've been slowly, you know, giving it out. And the last thing that I had was really my own personal prized possession. Mm-hmm. Out of everything they had given me. Like, they even had what I call, like, grown-up, beautiful, high-end stuff.
Yeah.
Like, my mother still has this ceramic cookie jar. It was like ceramic. Painted beautifully, and it looks like a television set, and like where the TV antennas are is where you lift off the lid. It's a cookie jar. It's a big, you know, like a glass ceramic cookie jar.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. They had crystal jewelry to the logo and the blimp and stuff like that, made out of crystal. It's incredible stuff. I had a watch that was a watch that I could wear out to like a fancy dinner, but it was a Nick at Night watch.
Oh.
And, you know, had a black leather band and a silver face with, like, you know, the raised numbers on it. I'm like, they had really, like, really high-end cool stuff, as well as, hey, here's the thing of Gak. And here's, you know, they had everything. Buttons, you know, Renaissance T-shirts, everything. But over the course of the years, I gave all that stuff. My most prized possession was actually given to me by the guy who was the head of Nick Studios. He gave one to... Michael Malley and I,
mm-hmm.
because of the Nickelodeon Live tour. And it was a denim jacket, button-up Levi's denim jacket, something that you would like see like maybe a biker wear. But on the back of it was the Nickelodeon Studios logo, and embroidered on the front was our name. So on the front of mine, it said, embroidered, mm-hmm. hand-stitched embroidery.
Wow.
And on his, it said Mike.
Yeah.
And on the back, it had the studio. It was beautiful. And that was the one thing, after I'd given away all of my stuff, that was the one thing that I still had until my niece graduated from college. And she had always, like, when she was 15, no, I think she was like 16 or 17, she used to always love the jacket. She'd come around, or like if we were going out somewhere, she'd be like, Uncle Phil, if it's cold, Uncle Phil, can you bring the jacket? Can I wear your jacket? And it would like be so big on her, but she didn't care. She loved that jacket. And so she moved. She and her family moved to California before I did. Excuse me. And she had been going through this job and that job and the other job and da 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 da. And finally, she kind of like settled up. She went to school. She finished school. And for graduation, I gave her the jacket as a graduation gift.
Oh, wow.
So that was the last thing that I had until last Friday. Again, your timing is perfect.
Oh, yeah, last Friday.
So, last Friday. Okay, so let me tell you what happened. There was a show that used to come on Nickelodeon in, like, the early 2000s, like 2003,
mm-hmm.
called Teen Nick.
Right.
It was hosted by Jay Boogie.
Yeah.
You ever remember the show? Okay, well, on the show that I was just working on, I just finished producing a brand new game show for Nickelodeon, and one of the people that was on staff was Jay Boogie.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about that very question, like, hey, do you have any Nick stuff? And I told him that same old long story that I just told you about, I used to have all the stuff. but I gave it all away.
Yeah.
And then last Thursday, he came to work, and he says, hey, Phil, I got something for you. Let's go up to the office. I went to my office, and he reaches in his bag, and he pulls out, you know how the baseball jackets, like, you know, with the suede front and the leather sleeve?
Yeah.
With Nickelodeon on the back of it, a total black jacket with orange trim. He goes, I got this for you. I said, what do you need? He goes, they gave me two of them when we finished up Team Nick. And he said, I don't really wear any of them. I said, they've never been out of the bag. They've never been off the hanger. But I have two of them. And when you told me that you, like a Nickelodeon legend, have no memorabilia from those days, he goes, I'm like, I got to give you one of the jackets. So he gave me one of the jackets and thanked me, you know, for, like, you know, being role models for all of the cats that came up underneath the, you know, behind us and stuff. And I thought that was the dopest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So now I've got this really dope black Nickelodeon jacket with orange trim that says Nickelodeon on
it. Wow, that's cool. So, yeah. Yeah, you deserve to have something from Nickelodeon, man. Yeah, he's right. You are a legend.
Yeah,
you need something.
It was a great time to be there, man. It was a great time to be there. And in a weird kind of way, it was good to be back. It's different, but it was really cool to be back.
Yeah. So do you think Nick Arcade would work today, a concept like that, if it came out now?
Well, that's interesting. Because I actually have been working very hard to try to do a reboot of a show that was similar to Nick Arcade,
mm-hmm.
because I can't see Nick Arcade because Viacom owns the rights. Even the guys that created the show don't own the rights to the show.
Yeah.
But I figure using virtual technology, which was different than what we used in Nick Arcade, doing the upfront portion differently than just regular Q&A, maybe something like that could be done. Here's my answer. I think it can be done, but I don't think it could be done on the grand scale that Nick Arcade was done, because of a couple of reasons. One, like, it's not new anymore. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've even mentioned yourself, oh my gosh, I watched this thing because I'd never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have seen something like it. You've seen stuff better than it. Okay? So in order to up the ante or to top ourselves, we would have to do a show that was bigger. And that's my point number two. TV is out, man. You know, I mean, TV is like on its way. It's on its last leg. It's being replaced by streaming. It's being replaced by YouTube. It's being replaced by iTunes. It's being replaced by Twitch, you know. So when you've got all of these other places and all these other ways to do TV or viewing or entertainment, you got to think about, like, the differences in money now. So the only place where I could see a 2018 Nick Arcade being done is maybe over at Netflix, because Netflix seemed to have deep pockets, you know?
They do.
But are you going to do a show that's like a show that somebody can see on Twitch for free? You see what I'm saying?
It's like you really
have to up the ante, and then it becomes, well, how much money do you put into upping the ante? Because you can't just make a really good kick-butt video game show, because there's a lot of people doing it right now on streaming services for free. You know what I mean? So it's kind of hard to convince a network into investing X amount of thousands of dollars into doing a show that is just like a show on another streaming thing. And if you want to convince them to do it bigger and better, like, how much is that going to cost? You see what I'm saying? So I said this before, and I mean this honestly. I said this before when I go out for convention. I think the biggest way to convince the Nickelodeon of the viability of bringing back the show is the fan.
Yeah.
It's something that it's kind of like an art form that people kind of forgot about. Back in the day, Star Trek was taken off the air, and the fans lost their mind and created this letter-writing campaign, and it got them to bring it back. Same thing happened with, oh gosh, what is the Veronica from Mars? Veronica Mars or something? Yeah. They were like showing up there, but they managed to like, you know, do something to make it make another movie. Same thing with Firefly and Serenity. When something went off and people got mad about it, they would express it to the actual network. But nowadays, people just kind of nag and complain to each other. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on, you know, social media where people can voice their opinions about things, and they can tell how they feel. They can be a disgruntled person, but they're talking like just to the wind. You know, they're just posting, you know, John says, I hate that they took the show off. And then somebody tweets back in, yeah, me too. And then somebody else, they can kiss my butt. And they're just kind of talking to the wind, but they're not talking to the people that did it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like, back, you know, I mean, literally, like I said, just go back recently as Firefly and Serenity. The fans got mad, and they started making demands on the network. And the network threw them a bone and said, we'll make you a movie. Will you be cool then? You know?
Mm-hmm.
You're all the way back to, like I said, about Star Trek. You know, fans got mad, and they went nuts, and they stormed the castle. And the castle said, all right, we'll give you another season. Nowadays, when fans get angry, they just talk about it to themselves, you know?
Yeah.
If you go on a YouTube channel and you have a panel of four people sitting around talking about, aren't you pissed that they did such and such? Yeah, I'm really mad. They did such and such. They're just talking to each other.
Yeah.
We have the most technological power ever given to us as human beings. And when it reached this level, all we do is talk to ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
When people have to, like, sit down and write a letter with a pen and a piece of paper, and they had to get an envelope, and they had to put a stamp on it. They went right to the source, and they went straight to the source, and they said, this is how I feel. And they could be as graphic as they wanted, but they could be as polite as they wanted, but they went straight to the NBC was overwhelmed with phone calls. It shut down their doggone telephone system with the people just calling in about how upset they were about the cancellation of Star Trek. And the same thing with the studio that canceled Fox when they canceled Firefly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we gotta stop these calls from coming in. We gotta stop these letters from coming in. Oh my gosh, our email is blowing up and our computer system crashed. Because people direct it. They focus their energy and their attention at the source. Not just it's cool to talk to each other, but you're never going to affect any kind of change just talking to each other. I can complain to you all day about something that I don't like, you
mm-hmm.
know, but until I go to that person, it's never going to make a change. And so I tell people, like, if you're really as adamant about it, look, the reason why I don't think Nick Arcade could work under those two conditions is because there's a third part of this that will make any network pick up the show.
Yeah.
That is, if the network really feels that the public is interested, boom, mic drop, I'm walking away. If the network, because money talks, man. Money talks.
Yeah,
so
it does.
Everybody thought,
universal language.
You know, exactly. And so if the network went, oh my gosh, did you see that we just got bombarded on Twitter to the point where we had to shut down our Twitter account because everybody is complaining, like, please, but you brought back Double Dare. You're talking about Clarissa Explains It All. That's all great, but come on. Do you know how technology has changed and how bomb Nickelodeon would be right now? I mean, Nick Arcade would be right now?
Yeah.
If something like that happened and they got overwhelmed, just like the people who band together and brought back Firefly and Serenity,
mm-hmm.
just like the people who brought back another season of Verano, who brought back The X-Files.
Yeah.
Like, people are bringing them back because they're talking to the people that made it go away and saying, hey, bring it back. They're not just talking to each other in Twitter space. They're talking to the network. And all of these networks have social media accounts. Nickelodeon's got one. Viacom's got one. And if they all of a sudden kept going, man, you know what? We can watch Mojo. It's a YouTube channel. And they did a thing of the top 10 game shows that need to come back. People look at it. Watch Mojo, WATCHMOJO.
Mm-hmm.
It came out about a couple of months ago. And when you do the countdown, spoiler alert, number one was Nick Arcade. I thought that was phenomenal.
It is.
There was more stuff happening like that in the world. And you know what I did to that? When I saw that, I immediately sent a link to that to five top Nickelodeon execs right now. I said, did you see this? Take a look at this. I said, I sent them that YouTube link to five top people, and they were like, whoa. I said, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm big buzz with Mark Summers, and I couldn't be happier they were able to bring back Double Dare. But it's not just Double Dare. You know what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
not just Double Dare. And I think that it's and it's almost and Double Dare is look, Double Dare is the staple of the Nickelodeon golden age. I was a fan of the show when I got hired to be Nick Martin, you
yeah.
know. But I met Mark Summers, I was fanboying out, you know? and so but it's one of because it's so popular, everybody already knows that at the network. They
yeah.
already know that people love that show. But maybe they don't know that there's a fandom for Nick Arcade. And the only way they're going to know is if people tell them. And that's,
yeah.
that's all I'm saying.
Let their voices
you know?
Be heard.
They just do. Right, exactly, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
So like I said, the first thing I did, man, serious business, I sent the link to five executives of, oh my gosh, did you see this? Look what the, I mean, a totally independent YouTube channel for Watch Mojo, top 10 game shows that need to be revived.
Wow.
And number one was Nick Arcade.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And they gave all the reasons you did because of the technology, because of VRs now, because of people, now everybody knows video games. Video games were new back in the day, and people kind of liked it. Now, everybody knows it, and they love it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just one guy.
Yeah, your voices need to be heard. Like, if you want Nick Arcade,
really,
like, you got to let them know.
Right.
So, I was going to say, tell us a little bit about your upcoming project. We were talking about it a little bit earlier about the new show that's coming out.
Yeah. Well, you know what? As they say, the circle of life, Simba. I was back in Nickelodeon. while they were shooting Double Dare, we were also shooting a brand new game show called Drop That Seat.
Mm-hmm.
It was created by Nick Cannon. Who, you know, from Nickelodeon back there, back in the day, and, you know, from, you know, the stuff that he does, Wilding Out and America's Got Talent back in the day. America's Got Talent, yeah. Anyway, Nick Cannon came up with this great show that was based off of, like, musical chairs meets a dance party meets stunts and games. So imagine if you had to do a game. Okay, it's like six people, two on each team.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to do a game that kind of looks almost like you're doing sort of a Wild and Crazy Kids type game,
mm-hmm.
except the body movements that you're doing is based off of an actual dance. You know,
yeah.
like there's this one game that we created called Dabbing for Dollars, where above you is a whole lot of fake dollar bills hanging up. And in order to grab them as fast as you can, and do the dab, you know, the dance called the dab, where you stick your arm up and put your head down, and you got to put your arm up, grab a dollar, figure out, grab a dollar,
yeah.
while the time is ticking. You know, so it's like, how can you live with it? So it's a game show about doing these stunts and these games and these challenges that are based off of dance moves.
Mm-hmm.
And then when time is up, you've got to run and try to make sure that your butt is in one of the remaining chairs left. So it's like musical chairs with dancing and challenges. All mixed together.
Yeah.
So it's called Drop That Seat. It's like musical chairs with dancing
yeah.
and challenges like a regular game show.
Yeah.
And so it's called Drop That Seat. The whole show is a party though. It's like, you know, the audience is always on their feet. They actually surround the actual show floor. So it's not like they're sitting in their chairs clapping. And we got a DJ, we got a dude named Kita the Great. He was a winner on So You Think You Can Dance. And he's our DJ. He comes out and does tutorials. He gets the party hype. The host of the show is Daniela. I can't remember her name right off the top of my head. But there's a brand new show on Nickelodeon called Night Squad. And she is one of the actresses on that show, and she is she stepped up, and this is her first time hosting, and man oh man, she knocked it out the park.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, hang on a second, I'm talking to you, I'm sitting up here looking up I'm Googling Night Squad so I can tell you her name, just her last name. Come on, why is my Wi-Fi all slow? Okay, here we go. Okay, yeah, Danny Perkins. Her name is Danielle, but they call her Danny. Danny Perkins. She plays Sierra on this new Nickelodeon show called Night Squad. And she's the host of the show. Tita the Great is our DJ and our dance expert. And we bring on 6 players. They battle it out. We dwindle down from 6 players down to 1 team. And then they go through sort of their own little party sort of relay race to try to win everything and claim that seat before the time is up. If your butt's not in the seat before the music stops, you get dropped. That's basically how the show works. It's a lot of fun. And we take a whole bunch of episodes. We started like pre-production back in February, and we just wrapped shooting our last episode on Friday. And right now we're in post-production of putting it together to get it up in air. Yeah, so, get it air. Yeah.
For the release date, it should be out later this year.
Yeah, it'll definitely be out later this year. I don't have an exact time yet. And it's funny, we were bugging them about, like, when is it going to be? But we don't know yet. But I'll tell you what I'll do. Like, when I find out, I'll hit you up and just drop you a line and let you know. So if you want to do
that. Yeah, and I'll share with everyone else.
Put thing on another podcast.
That information comes out.
Yeah, sounds good. So, it sounds like a lot of fun. So Nickelodeon came out the box with an oldie but goodie, Double Dare, and then the brand new Rock FC.
Nickelodeon's starting to come back a little bit with all these good shows coming up.
Well, you know, I think it's kind of interesting that maybe, like I was talking about before, maybe the voice of the people is kind of starting to be heard. Because right now, I can tell you that people have been really making their voice clear about the fact that they like the way the older Nickelodeon used to be. So now you've got Mark Summers back on doing a sort of like the commentary person for the new Double Dare. Mm-hmm. They've got a different host, but Mark is still on the show. And the show I just worked on, you've got 2 Nickelodeon veteran guys. You've got Jay Boogie from Nickelodeon in the 2000s, and you've got Phil Moore from Nickelodeon in the 90s, mm-hmm. and we're part of the production team making a brand new Nick show. So even though it's not us, we're still bringing that old school flavor into a new thing, you know?
Yeah.
So
introducing
I think that,
to a new
like,
generation.
Something's starting to happen.
Yeah.
Right. I think people are starting to, I think the network is starting to hear it. The mere fact that there's 3 people from back, and then of course Kel Mitchell is on Game Shakers, you know? So that's 4 people from back in the day who have recently stepped their toe back into the Nickelodeon pool. And we're not just in there just doing, like, we're bringing, like I said, a sense about what we used to do to this new era so that it reflects, like, we're doing all, like on Drop That Seat. We're doing all of we're doing the latest dances. We're doing the wobble. We're doing the dab. We're doing the flops. We're doing, the backpack kid dance. You know, we're doing all that stuff. But yet, even though we're doing, like, the modern stuff, the way the show feels has that old, good old 90s Nickelodeon flavor mm-hmm. while we're doing dances from 2018.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's good to see that they are hearing, the network is hearing something on one end, and maybe if the crowd starts making noise about some other things, then we get some other things pushed.
Exactly. Just keep getting your voices heard. For those who missed it, what's the name of the show again?
It's called Drop That Seat.
Man, Phil Moore, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's been a blast, my man.
Man, oh, man, look, this has been dope, man. It's been awesome hanging out. You're a great host, chatting it up a bit, man. I'm always happy to talk about back in the day and what's happening now, man.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Phil Moore, everybody.
Special thanks to Phil Moore for taking time for coming on the Throwback. Nick Arcade was one of the greatest Nickelodeon game shows of all time. We are definitely looking forward to hearing more about his upcoming project in the near future.
Oh, I agree, man. That show was awesome. Phil Moore is my main man. Man, I loved how he got down to the nitty-gritty, Daddy. There's nobody else like him. We should bring back the show one day.
Hey, what are you doing? Are you still looking through those box of Pogs?
Oh, check this one. Here's a Montel Williams Pog. You remember him, that talk show host dude. And check it. Here's a Sally Jesse Raphael Pog. It's a special talk show host edition. We should get one made of Fillmore for this one.
Jimmy, he's a game show host, not a talk show host.
Oh, we can still make one. Oh, check this special slammer pog of Whoopi Goldberg. This is a Sister Act edition, Daddy.
How many pogs are in this box?
Oh, there's lots of them, Daddy. There's even a Married with Children edition. Al Bundy pog. Look at him. He's sitting on the couch and everything.
I think we've seen enough pogs for today, Jimmy. Anyways, folks, on our calm down now. On the next edition of the Throwback, we have a very special episode coming up if you're a big fan of wrestling from the 90s. If you love World Championship Wrestling, you are really going to dig this next edition. Stay tuned in the coming weeks to find out more.
Oh, you mentioned wrestling, Daddy. Check this pog out. It's a limited edition Pee Wee Anderson pog. You remember him? He was that WCW referee, Daddy. I got him, and I got the Shockmaster. You remember that dude that fell through that wall?
Yes, I think we all do. That's a very interesting collection of pogs, Jimmy. Anyways, folks, see you guys on the next edition of the Throwback.
Look, there's even a Dave Meltzer pog in here.
You gotta be kidding me. Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on Twitter at Throw Podcast or on the web at www.blogtalkradio.com/throwback.